Brexit will define and consume the United Kingdom for the next generation. It doesn't have to define us. So said the Taoiseach in his address last night to the Fine Gael National Conference. And Leo Varadkar joins us now in studio. Taoiseach, before we get on to Brexit and those political events, we'll be talking about the FAI and John Delaney later in the programme. As a former Minister for Sport, are you surprised by the revelations about the FAI and their finances?
I am, quite frankly. Certainly seems that there have been some unusual arrangements when it comes to the FAI's finances. Certainly the bridging loan is unusual. An organisation of that size and scale would have banking facilities. I would have assumed they'd be able to get a loan of €100,000 if they needed to. So obviously questions have to be answered. The Joint Directors Committee will carry out hearings later in the week, chaired by Fergus O'Dowd. Noel Rock will be there as Fine Gael TD, but also a representative of football fans in many ways as well, and he's taken interest in this for a long time. But the most important thing, obviously, from a public point of view, and this isn't a public body, of course, but it does receive public funding, is that we'll want to be sure that the money that we give them as taxpayers, which, you know, isn't for the professional game, it's for participation, for young people, for women, that money has all been spent on the purposes intended.
Okay, but as Minister for Sport, you weren't aware of any of these arrangements?
Oh, God, no.
Okay. Moving along to Brexit. As you say, it doesn't have to define us long term, but it will certainly define the economic and social environment for the next couple of years. Are you any clearer after the events of the last week of how, in the name of God, this is going to end up?
You know, Brexit is unpredictable and it is uncharted territory. No country has ever left the European Union before. Hopefully no country will ever leave again. So it's impossible to predict the future. But, you know, plan A is the withdrawal agreement. We have spent 2 years negotiating it. It's been agreed by 28 governments, including the UK government. And it's still the only and best deal on the table for the United Kingdom for them to leave with a deal.
Okay.
So we will see, I think, a further vote this week coming. And if it is unsuccessful again, my understanding is what might happen at that point is a series of indicative votes. And perhaps those indicative votes may open up possibilities that had previously been closed. You know, for example, a customs union. A customs union, in very simple terms, means no tariffs and no customs checks anywhere. North, south, east, west, between Britain and France, or between
which would be the best option for us?
It would render large sections of the controversial backstop unnecessary. But that in many ways tells a story in itself. The backstop was necessary because it was drawn around the red lines that the UK government themselves put down,
and Mrs. May in particular. Now, Mrs. May, according to reports of the summit on Thursday, was telling you and telling other leaders that she would get her meaningful vote three through the House of Commons. Do you accept the credibility of those assertions?
Except that she's in a better position to judge that than we are. You know, we meet regularly, we talk regularly. She believes there is a pathway of victory. And as is often the case in politics, it requires a domino effect. So it requires, you know, certain people to come on board. And as they come on board, other people come on board. And there are certain people who I understand have indicated that they will vote for the agreement, but only if they know the vote will pass. So this is the kind of thing that goes on in politics. So it's not entirely...
Are you referring to the DUP there?
Certainly the British government and the Prime Minister would like to get the DUP on board. And they believe if they had the DUP on board, that would reassure Conservative unionists, if you like, people who are English unionists who also are very concerned about the integrity of the United Kingdom. And then they believe that there are Labour leavers, you know, people in Labour who want to leave the European Union, who want this issue in their mind off the table, who might vote for it, but only if there's a majority. But this is all internal British politics, and there's very little we can do to influence it. So we just largely try to stay out of it.
Okay, but as you say, I mean, the DUP are key because they could start a momentum towards a vote. And one suggestion Mrs. May made in last Tuesday's debate was to give a restored Northern Ireland Assembly a vote on a cross-community basis on whether the backstop should be brought into force if there are delays in the trade talks. A cross-community vote would obviously give a veto to the DUP. And on the other hand, we give a veto to Sinn Féin. Now, she said that in the debate on Tuesday. Is that an option, do you think, that could be explored, or would you have concerns about it?
Well, what we couldn't have is anything that contradicts the existing letter and spirit of the withdrawal agreement, including the protocol in Ireland. So what the protocol says is that if after a roughly 2-year transition period. We haven't agreed a future relationship that negates the need for a hard border, that there could then be another transition period. And then after that, and only after that, the backstop kicks in, and only to the extent that it has to. So provided it didn't contradict what's in the withdrawal agreement, I would consider that to be an internal matter for the United Kingdom.
What happens in the Assembly is an internal matter for the United Kingdom. Does the Irish government not have a role as well?
Oh, no, we have a role, but if this is very theoretical, of course, but if the United Kingdom were to devolve functions to the Northern Ireland Executive and Assembly that didn't contradict the Good Friday Agreement or didn't contradict the withdrawal agreement, you know, while we may have an opinion on that, it wouldn't be for us to block it. But from what you said there, I'm not sure that's exactly what she said, but if that's what she said,
well, it's from Ed of Hansard.
That would be a difficulty.
Yes, okay, it's Ed of Hansard.
Because it's not the case that the backstop backstop clicks in automatically. It's not a case of there being a vote in Parliament.
I think she was talking about extending the implementation
period. What would be entirely reasonable, and I think that's what she was getting at, is that after the end of the first implementation phase, as they call it, or transition period, there's a choice between the backstop and a further implementation phase, and at that point Northern Ireland Executive could have a role, have no difficulty with that.
But we wouldn't have a problem with extending the implementation phase if the alternative was obviously a hard border. But
no,
anyway,
of course.
It's as you say, this is all highly theoretical, and it would involve having the Northern Ireland Assembly up and running again, which also might be a problem. Now, the first option is meaningful vote 3 goes through, and they leave on schedule on the 23rd of May with an agreement. The second is that by April the 12th, they decide they want something different. And we're talking about the indicative votes. Mrs. May has made it clear that she won't seek a further extension. She won't lead a further extension because she doesn't believe that Britain should take part in the European elections, which would be a precondition for a longer extension period. And there are those rumours of a coup, possible coup against her. Her time as Prime Minister may be limited. Any alternative leader of the Tory party would be elected by the Tory membership and is therefore likely to be the most extreme Brexiteer on the ballot paper. If Mrs. May is replaced, it could be actually somebody worse from our point of view.
And that leadership contest takes quite some time, many months, certainly well beyond the European elections. So, again, these are totally hypothetical scenarios, but we'll just have to see what develops. As I understand it, the way the Conservative Party rules work is two names are put to the members. So the two names are picked by the MPs. So, you know, it's just very difficult to know what would arise. But as I said, and as I said last night, it's evident to me that Britain and British politics is consumed by Brexit. They can do almost nothing else. Even if they do leave in the next couple of weeks, I think they'll be consumed for another couple of years in still trying to decide what type of relationship they want with the European Union. My job is to make sure that we're not consumed by it and defined by it, and we're not going to be.
Okay.
We're going to get through this, and then we're going to press ahead with the important things that we want to do over the next couple of years around a strong economy, around building society in which nobody's left behind, around Ireland's place in the world, the environment, and building our world-class infrastructure.
Okay, before we get on to that, there is the third possible outcome, which is that the meaningful vote is voted down again, they can't agree on a way forward, and Britain comes up against the cliff edge again on the 12th of April, and we could be facing a no-deal Brexit. What help can we expect from Europe if that happens? What supports are locked in to help the agribusiness sector in particular, which could be devastated by a no-deal Brexit?
Yeah, we've done a huge amount of work with the European Commission in particular over the past couple of months on the package that we would put in place in the event of no deal to support business, exporters, farmers, agri-food sector in particular, fishermen too. And it's important to say that no package can fully compensate or mitigate against the effects of no deal. So I'm not suggesting for a second that it'll all be fine, but it is a very large package, many hundreds of millions of euros that we would be able to put in place, some funded through borrowing by government, some funded through the European Commission, that would provide income supports for farmers in particular, would provide income supports for fishermen and fisherwomen, and would also provide restructuring and rescue funds for business. So first of all, protecting jobs and incomes, and then secondly, funding to allow us to restructure and reorientate our export markets towards new products and towards new markets.
Okay, but presumably whatever money is available from the European Union sources, the French farmers will be looking for slices as well. So everybody's chasing the same amount of money. Is there enough money on the table from a central European budget?
Well, first of all, it wouldn't be just for us. Other countries are affected too, including France and Denmark. That helps, by the way, because the fact that France and Denmark are affected means that more money will be made available. And one of the things that we're working on is the extent to which we can top it up with our own resources. And we're doing well on that. You know, sometimes you can only match one to one. It looks like we're going to be able to do better than that. But I do need to make sure that this is understood. It's not that we have hundreds of millions of euros or billions of euros sitting in a bank account somewhere to do this. This will be funded through borrowing. And that's one of the reasons why last year we took a decision to run a budget surplus, ran the first budget surplus in 10 years last year. We're planning on a budget surplus this year. It's why we set up the rainy day fund, so that if we ended up in this situation, we would have the capacity to borrow in order to save jobs and save incomes. And bear in mind, we faced huge criticism from the opposition. They told us we shouldn't be running a surplus or setting up a rainy day fund, that we should be borrowing more and spending more. And isn't it a good thing now that we didn't take that advice?
Okay, what about the other issue, which is the border on this island, if there is a no deal? Brexit, Angela Merkel was telling German reporters no deal would mean there would have to be a hard border.
I suppose we've touched on this on a number of occasions. And again, plan A, of course, is getting the withdrawal agreement through, which means that there won't be a hard border, ever a hard border, as a consequence of Brexit. Plan B is a different scenario whereby the United Kingdom might decide to go for a customs union. All that could still happen. And if we end up in a no-deal scenario, that's the most difficult scenario. And that's the situation whereby we have to have some difficult discussions, not only with the UK, but also with the European Commission, around how we keep the border open. And as I've always explained to my European colleagues, both the United Kingdom and Ireland have responsibilities under the Good Friday Agreement. So we'd be in a difficult situation, obviously, whereby we'd have obligations under the Good Friday Agreement, which would conflict with our obligations under the European treaties. And we will want to protect the single market and the customs union, because it's our single market, it's our customs union. Our jobs and our economy are dependent on us being a full member of the European Union and the customs union. But I think what you're into then, and we've seen some indication of this from the British government, is special arrangements. And the UK government has already indicated that in the event of no deal, the first thing they will do is treat Northern Ireland differently in terms of customs, which is ironic in a way, but that's what they would do. And that's what's kind of, that's what would be required, essentially. But this is not a good alternative.
No.
The withdrawal agreement is the best way forward.
Okay. Now, I don't expect you to outline government's thinking about that, because that's a situation you don't want to you don't want to have to face. But if you do face it in a couple of weeks' time, are you ready to start those negotiations? Are you ready to start those difficult discussions, as you call them? And are you reasonably confident that Brussels and the other member governments will cut you some slack, as you put it yourself, about the British?
I am, and in a preliminary way and a very rough way, some of those conversations have started already, as you'd expect them to have. There is a real understanding of the unique situation that we face in Ireland because of the Good Friday Agreement, because of the peace process, because of the nature of the border. And we've spent, you know, the best part of 2.5 years helping our European colleagues to understand that. You know, I've lost count of the number of prime ministers and foreign ministers who've been on the border to see what it looks like and how it's different to other borders they may have seen in the past. And I think we've real understanding on that issue. You know, I think we receive a lot of support on a need for special arrangements for Northern Ireland and for Ireland in that hypothetical event of no deal. But we also need to realise and accept ourselves that while the UK may leave, we're still part of the European Union. We're in the Eurozone, we're in the single market, we're in the customs union. Enforcing and protecting the single market isn't some nasty European regulation. It's our single market, it's our customs union. It's the basis on which we have jobs and prosperity, because we're part of that big trading bloc. So we do need to protect it.
Even if there's pain involved in that?
Like I say, there will be consequences to it, but it's not going to be a hard border. It's not going to be physical infrastructure, checks,
Okay.
Not going to be that.
Okay, one way or the other, Brexit is going to be resolved in the next couple of weeks. There'll either be an agreed withdrawal, there'll either be a no-deal crash out, which obviously you hope won't happen, or there'll be a longer extension. At that point, the rationale for keeping for avoiding a general election in this state disappears.
Well, you know my position on this. Last summer, July, August, I put forward a proposal that we should agree on election date in the summer of 2020 and that we should agree a whole set of policies and actions that the government would be expected to do between now and then, not just on Brexit, but also on tax, the economy, healthcare, housing, the environment, lots of other important things. Fianna Fáil rejected that and they decided instead to link the length or life of this government to Brexit in particular. So that's a decision they made. My focus is not on election dates. It's on getting the work of the people done.
Okay, but you were very critical of Fianna Fáil again in your speech last night. Party with no ideas, no policies, no alternatives. Why go out of your way to insult people who are actually keeping you in power?
I don't think I went out of my way. I think it was one aspect of a 22-minute speech. But in fairness,
well, in fairness, you have form on this. The Fine Gael selection convention in February, you said, "I wonder if Fianna Fáil was 5 to 10% ahead in the polls for the last year, would they be quite so willing to facilitate us?" You do seem to
That's a bit of a habit of it. I think it's fair to say that Fianna Fáil doesn't pull its punches when it comes to being critical of the government or me or individual ministers, often very personalised, you know, whether it's Owen Murphy's background or Simon Harris's age or you name it. So, I don't think they can be oversensitive about this. If you're able to give it, you should be able to take it.
Okay. How do you account for the drop in your own popularity in opinion polls? It can't all be to do with your metabolic age.
I don't know, to be honest. I'm sure psychologists and political scientists will study that in great detail and read far too much into it.
Are you worried about it in context of Fine Gael support in elections coming up?
Well, I'm not going to pretend to you that I ignore opinion polls. I don't. Politicians pay attention to opinion polls, but I always take them in threes or fours. I think you can often read too much into any individual poll. But it is the case that notwithstanding the fact that we're in government now for 8 years, so that we're still ahead of all the other parties. That's not the worst position to be in by any means. But, you know, if you want to turn the polls in your favour, it's not about dissecting polls. It's about doing the things that the public want you to do. And that really, in my view, is getting Ireland through the next phase of Brexit. It's putting money back in people's pockets. It's reducing the cost of accessing public services like healthcare and childcare. It's building the infrastructure that we need for further growth and for a better society. And, you know, that's the focus. And that's, if you want to change opinion polls in your favour, you get busy doing your job. And that's what I'm at.
Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, thanks very much for joining us.